AM W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Derek Dennis. Fog grounding several flights this Christmas Eve morning at Chicago O'Hare. But elsewhere, delays and cancellations have been minimal this holiday weekend. On the roads, AAA says some 115 million Americans are traveling 50 miles or more through New Year's Day, and some could be hitting wintry weather.
Those dreaming of a white Christmas might see a blizzard instead in parts of Nebraska and South Dakota, where winds could gust up to 55 miles per hour with heavy snow coming down, around 8 to 18 inches possible in parts of Nebraska and South Dakota between now and Thursday. And we're also looking at drifting, of course, with that wind and power outages possible, too.
ABC meteorologist Kenton Jawicki. In Florida, a manhunt for a gunman who opened fire inside a mall, killing a man and wounding a woman. Happened at the Paddock Mall in Ocala outside Orlando. Police calling the shooting targeted. Witnesses say the gunman was dressed in all black, including a face mask. This is ABC News. A founding member of the Dixie Chicks has died.
The Texas Department of Public Safety says Laura Lynch was killed in a head-on wreck east of El Paso on Friday. She was a founding member of the Dixie Chicks. She sang and played bass on the band's first three albums, including 1990's Thank Heavens for Dale Evans. You're everything I ever wanted. Brian Clark, ABC News.
A report recommends preventing police officers from reviewing their body camera video before making their first statements to investigators.
An advanced copy of the report by the Police Executive Research Forum, says the Associated Press, urges police departments to have clear policies on releasing video to the public. It says few do. Letting officers see body camera footage before speaking to investigators can allow their stories to change to fit the video, says a senior analyst at the American Civil Liberties Union. An official with the nation's largest police union says if stories and video don't align, cops could be accused of perjury. Chuck Sievertson, ABC News.
I'm Derek Dennis, ABC News.
We here at WBZH The Buzz have partnered with the Hayward Chamber of Commerce to remind you to shop local this holiday season. Small local businesses are the lifeblood of the community, and preserving them is key to preserving those things we most enjoy about the Northwoods. Small businesses are the first in local employment and charitable giving, and shopping local is the best way to stimulate a small town economy. The Hayward Chamber of Commerce and WBZH The Buzz are especially thankful to those who choose local small businesses first this holiday season.
Latrell spent more than 8 years in foster care. His world changed when he was adopted at 15 with help from the Dave Thomas Foundation for Adoption.
I think about how much we love him, and I wish we could have had him for his entire childhood.
The foundation is changing the lives of thousands of teens waiting in foster care. You can help. Learn more at DaveThomasFoundation.org.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. College students in Wisconsin promised to push back against new limits on diversity and inclusion efforts. Mike Moan reports.
The Board of Regents approved a deal pushed by Republican lawmakers to freeze DEI hiring so that schools could receive state funding for staff raises and campus construction projects. Jesse Segarra of the Wisconsin-based group Leaders Igniting Transformation sees the outcome as a dangerous precedent. She hopes student groups will be motivated to push back.
Student government associations in Wisconsin hold a great power and privilege to speak on behalf of the students, especially with working with chancellors and administrators and the dean of students.
Segarra says she's encouraging these associations to use their resources to support diversity efforts, encouraging students to attend meetings. Republican legislative leaders contend DEI programs are divisive. Their arguments come amid growing cultural debates at colleges and universities across the U.S. Segarra says diversity, equity, and inclusion programs were a tremendous help when she attended college in Wisconsin. She feels they can set students who feel they don't have a voice on a better path.
All students benefit, and especially students who come from different backgrounds, whether they come from big cities, small cities. Everyone benefits from these resources.
And researchers with Texas A&M University say their look into a specific DEI plan revealed an increase in enrollment for Latino students, among other positive benefits. However, the study also found that despite these efforts, students felt that people on campus still tended to stay within their own identity groups. This is Mike Moen for Wisconsin News Connection. Support for this reporting was provided by Lumina Foundation.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
This is your hometown radio, Refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Clouds and some dense fog around the area at times today. We'll see highs of the lower 50s, some very late day rain chances. South winds gusting up around 30. For your Christmas Eve, rain chances, lows in the lower 40s, and winds will stay breezy. Currently 44 degrees.
Sawyer County's choice for news, talk, and sports. The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome. Grab your favorite morning beverage and join us for Morning Cannolis with Jim Santel. You don't know me, but I'm your brother. Sampling the news desserts of the week, here is your host, Jim Santel.
Good morning. This is Jim Santel, and I am your host this morning of our Saturday morning broadcast. Delighted to have you joining me and my wonderful producer, Anya, for our two-hour discussion this morning. We're broadcasting to you this morning from the wonderful studios of WAUK in downtown Waukesha. But as always, through the wonderful auspices of Civic Media, we're transmitting to regions and cities throughout the wonderful state of Wisconsin. Once again, delighted to have you with me and Anya this morning. In our weekly review, our analysis, our examination of some of those most significant recent news items and stories and events in the areas of law and government and the aspiration for justice in America. As always, I am supported by my wonderful producer, Anya, and together in the studios here of Civic Media, we are soliciting, we're encouraging your questions, your inquiries, and your follow-ups on the topics of the day. Going to get to those, talking about the syllabus in just a moment or so. How do you get into our program this morning? How do you participate in this good discussion of civics and justice and law and government in America? What you do is you call 844-967-2789. You get the chance to speak directly to Anya, who will work with us in getting your comments, your questions on the air. Or you can also go to the Civic Media website, go to the app, find your particular broadcast station, pull down a folder that says Morning Cannolis, and be a part of our discussion. That way, send us your questions, your notes in writing, and we'd be delighted once again to entertain those, soliciting, as always, your discussion in this morning, our 77th broadcast since going on the air in June of 2022. And as always this morning, on the broadcast stations of Civic Media, we have another ambitious, wildly ambitious, but achievable agenda this morning. Hopefully for all of you, informative and maybe even inspiring. Maybe inspiring when it comes to things we should be doing, thinking about in response to these major news events of the past week and even the past couple of weeks or so. As always, we ask as a part of that syllabus, that academic approach to civics this morning, constitutional law, statutory interpretation, and the ways in which the law affects our lives daily, understanding it, making sense of it, and ensuring that we've got an understanding about where we go from here. We ask three questions. What happened? First, what happened? What do we know? What do we know with certainty? What are the facts of the case? Always important to predicate any discussion about civics in America based upon what are known, what are the true provable facts out there? Second, why are those things important? Why are they relevant? In the words of legal issues in court and out of court, why are they material? Why are they significant to understanding the world, the state in which we live, our nation in particular? And finally, what should we do about those things? In many cases, there are things we should be responding to. How do we answer? How do we respond to those things? What actions should we be taking as responsible citizens in America in the early part of the 21st century and beyond? What should we do in response to those issues of our times? Always, always a very ambitious but achievable agenda this morning. Let me tell you where we're going from here, beginning in just a few moments. We have had a week of state court action of dramatic impact here in the state of Wisconsin and certainly throughout the United States of America. You know what those cases are about. Yes, we're going to talk about the Wisconsin Supreme Court this morning, and we're also going to talk about the Colorado Supreme Court. We spend a lot of time on this broadcast chatting about federal courts, district courts, appellate courts, and certainly the United States Supreme Court. This morning is no exception to that usual agenda, that syllabus. But this morning we're going to talk beginning about the Wisconsin Supreme Court, this major decision it issued just yesterday afternoon, not 24 hours old already, having to do with redistricting, commanding, directing that the lines in the state of Wisconsin for our assembly and Senate districts be redrawn on the basis that they have been in violation of the Constitution of our state, and in particular, the contiguity requirement of the Constitution. We've talked about that before in setting up the oral argument that happened a few weeks ago before the Supreme Court. This morning, we're going to analyze the decision issued by a majority of our Wisconsin Supreme Court just yesterday, finding that the lines, the districts that we used in 2020 are inconsistent with the Wisconsin Constitution. And then we're going to talk about what that means practically. Where do we go from here? What does the Supreme Court decision mean in terms of 2024? What are the options that are still out there legally? What has the Supreme Court directed happens next? Very important discussion this morning to understand right here in the state of Wisconsin what the future of elections and campaigns are going to be all about in 2024. Then we're going to go back just a few days to Monday of this past week, where another state Supreme Court issued another opinion. It is difficult to say that these cases are more or less important than the other. They're all significant, not only to Colorado, not only to Wisconsin, but they have implications for the nation as a whole. Colorado Supreme Court, as you know well, issuing this major decision, finding that, yes, indeed, Section 3 of the 14th Amendment to the Constitution requires that a candidate named Donald Trump remain off the ballot, that he is not qualified under the Constitution to serve in the office of the presidency, and therefore directing in the state of Colorado that his name not be on the primary ballot coming up for election there in Colorado very soon. As before, like here in the state of Wisconsin, we're going to talk about the specific aspects of that particular decision, a major decision, a large decision, like our Wisconsin decision, deciding that major issue under the federal Constitution. I'm going to talk about what that means practically, where that case is likely going to go, the option to go to the United States Supreme Court there, and other matters related to the implementation of that major decision by a state Supreme Court keeping a major candidate, Donald Trump, off the ballot in that particular state. Then we're going to do a little bit more SCOTUS review, Supreme Court of the United States review, talk about some things the Supreme Court has decided not to do this past week. You know what those are, related to the argument that Donald Trump is immune from prosecution. We'll talk about a major decision by the Supreme Court. Very simple. Unlike the state Supreme Court decisions, which are tens, hundreds of pages long, the Supreme Court just this past week, in a one-sentence order, making a major decision about not reviewing, at least for now, this immunity decision about whether or not the former president is immune under constitutional law from any criminal prosecution for events he undertook, things he did while he was the president of the United States of America. We're going to talk also about where the Supreme Court is generally today, how many cases it has decided to hear this term, including now two from the United States Court of Appeals for the Seventh Circuit, where we are right here, Wisconsin, Illinois, and Indiana. I'll tell you more about those two cases now pending before the United States Supreme Court. And then, principally in our second hour, the third component, the third major segment of our continuing discussion of the future of America under a Trump presidency, based once again upon those things that the candidate, Donald Trump, has said publicly, things on his website, things his campaign has indicated they plan to do with respect to the administration of justice in America, government, the executive branch in particular, this notion of a unitary executive theory. We're going to revisit that. I'm going to pick up from our discussion of just last week. I'm going to focus in particular upon issues related to immigration, which, yes, indeed, is a rule of law topic. We're going to talk about the importance of a military force being used domestically under something called the Insurrection Act, a promise also made by former President Trump, candidate Trump for the presidency. We're going to talk principally about the federal workforce. We have chatted before about the implications of these Supreme Court cases pending right now before our high court, affecting the way that we understand agencies and the ways in which they do their work. We're going to talk about that, but also about the people who inhabit our great civil service system. The prediction, the promise by the Trump campaign about what it is planning to do, again, in a second Trump term, with respect to the civil workforce in those agencies that populate our nation, that make government go, what the plans are for those civil servants, and the kinds of people in particular, the kinds of people that the president, perhaps future president, is promising to bring into the government arena in the coming term, if indeed he is elected. All of that coming up in our second hour. And then finally, a program note that we'll talk more about at the end of our second hour, having to do with the final show. Again, a final show next week on December 30th, the final program, our final broadcast of 2023, making some sense of the major issues of this past year, but also giving you some suggestions in the context of civics and rule of law and government and all those kinds of things related to the administration of justice, about how we get through 2024, anticipating all of these kinds of things happening in 2024, major elections, major campaigns, court cases, civil and criminal, as we define in 2024 what the future of America is all about. We're going to spend some time next week with some suggestions, some recommendations, some gentle encouragement to think about the future in the context of civics and the importance of what you can do. You can do not only for yourself, the people are important to you, your families, but also other things related to the community, engagement in the civics of our nation, what the mission should be as we go into 2024. All of that coming up this week and then next week as well here on Morning Cannolis. Thank you once again for joining me, encouraging you once again to call in at 844-967-2789 or also send us a note with your questions, your inquiries about the topics of this day. Delighted, honored to have you with me once again for the beginning of our Saturday morning broadcast. So let us jump into precisely that. Let us begin right here in the state of Wisconsin with this major decision issued by our Wisconsin Supreme Court just yesterday afternoon, less than one day out from that more important decision. What did it say? The Wisconsin Supreme Court overturned the legislative maps just Friday and ordered that new district boundary lines be drawn and provided some instruction about how that's going to happen as we go forward in the state of Wisconsin. When we come back from this first break, we're going to talk more about specifically what the majority said, what the minority said, and what you can expect next in the wake of this major decision coming out of a Wisconsin Supreme Court on Friday, just yesterday, here in our state. Stay with us for that discussion.
Listening to the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH, the fastest hour in radio, serving truth, justice, and equality with every slice. Outside the Pizza Box with Pizza Box Mike, Friday nights at 7 on the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
Timeout.
All right. Remember, we're a team that plays together. Listen, the winning will take care of itself. We just have to get everyone involved.
In interscholastic sports, we celebrate what makes every one of us unique. And in the pursuit of a common goal, everyone in the huddle, in the bleachers, and in the community comes together.
This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Call him out. She says, I think he did it, but I just can't prove it. I think he
and we are
did
back in our Saturday morning broadcast. Thank you once again for joining Anya and me here in our studios of WAUK, but inviting your questions, your comments, your inquiries from throughout the state of Wisconsin, our listening areas. Again, honored to have you with me for 2 hours, 2 hours this morning, as always, of the rule of law, justice, and the delivery of issues relevant to civics in America. Talking at the top of our program this morning about this major life-changing decision by our Wisconsin Supreme Court just yesterday, ruling 4-3, yes, a split court, and finding in particular that the present legislative maps, the maps that were used in the 2022 election, are unconstitutional, contrary to the language of our state constitution, because the districts that are drawn under the previous plan are not contiguous, raising this contiguity argument about which we have spoken at length in the past. New maps, probably, if the schedule set up by the Supreme Court is to be followed, probably about to be unveiled, maybe in about 2 months or so from now, just in time for 2024 to kick in and the several elections that we have right here in the state of Wisconsin. What does the majority say? Well, Jill Karofsky, one of the associate justices, writing on behalf of the majority, again, four justices supporting this decision, three of them in the minority will get to their statements as well. We always try to provide a balanced view of what all of the justices say in these cases. But the majority writes just yesterday, because the current state legislative districts contain separate, detached territory. That's the reference to contiguity, the failure to have contiguous districts. They contain separate, detached territory, Associate Justice Karofsky writes, and therefore violate the Constitution's contiguity requirements. We, that is the Supreme Court, enjoin. We basically direct, we tell the Wisconsin Elections Commission, which again is the agency, the state agency responsible ultimately for these kinds of things, from using the current legislative maps in future elections. Stopping, enjoining is one of those legal words that basically says stopping you from doing something, stopping the Election Commission from going ahead with the elections in 2024 based upon the current maps that were put in place a couple of years ago, based upon the fact that they're in violation of the contiguity requirement under our state constitution. Obviously, all of this huge in terms of the future of elections. The Wisconsin Supreme Court went on to tell us more. And this is the most important thing that we should all be thinking about. What does that mean practically? Where do we go from here? It is one thing plainly to tell the Wisconsin Election Commission, stop using those maps. It's another thing to understand, what do we do next? If we don't have those maps in place, what do we tell people, not only those who are running for office, but especially those who are voting, as we do throughout the state of Wisconsin? What do we tell you about where you're voting, who you're voting for? What is your particular district? Where are the lines being drawn for the Assembly and Senate districts? And how are you represented then in the state legislature in Madison, Wisconsin? Well, the Supreme Court gave us some direction in this landmark case, again, issued just yesterday. The Supreme Court said it will proceed with adopting remedial maps, changed maps, replacing those it has found unconstitutional as of yesterday for the 2024 election. It's going to do this, put this in place, promise that those maps will be in place unless the normal process takes place. And what is that normal process? Supreme Court says once again, what should happen here is that the legislature should come up with a set of maps, some lines here, and those maps should be reviewed by the governor. If the governor, as the process normally contemplates, can in fact agree with the legislature and can sign off on those new line drawn to maps, we're all taken care of. Those new maps will be in place, presumably remedying the unconstitutionality of the present maps in place for the previous election. Now, as a practical matter, we all know it is unlikely, given the history of what happened the last time we put these very maps in place. We did not have agreement between the state legislature and the governor. Went ultimately to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court made a couple of decisions at that time, adopting what was called a least change theory. That ultimately went up to the Supreme Court. The United States Supreme Court found that the Voting Rights Act had not been properly followed, sent it all back down, and the Supreme Court, the Wisconsin Supreme Court, ultimately went in favor of the legislative maps not approved by the governor, adopted those, and said those are the maps for 2022. A lot of serpentine, circuitous goings-on at the time of the adoption of the maps now found unconstitutional. Our Supreme Court yesterday saying once again that that process yielded maps that are in violation of the contiguity requirement in our Constitution, promising, number one, telling the legislature and the governor, go back and do it again, but on the assumption, which I suspect we all know on all sides of the political aisle, it is highly unlikely that we're going to get a legislature and a governor, the agreement between them, highly unlikely on this kind of thing. And so it will almost certainly come back or be once again in front of the Wisconsin Supreme Court. And the Wisconsin Supreme Court has said, as have other courts around our country, if you don't do it, legislature and governor, the other two branches of government, the executive branch, the legislative branch, if you don't do this, we will do it for you. And so, indeed, in anticipation of that, the Wisconsin Supreme Court has already hired, appointed two consultants who will have a hand in reshaping the districts in our state, those specific lines. One of them is named Jonathan Service. He is from the Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh. He was responsible in part for redrawing New York's congressional and state Senate maps after a court struck those down under a similar attack. So he's got some background in this area. And then there's a second consultant named Bernard Groffman. He's from the University of California in Irvine. And he was involved in redrawing Virginia's federal and state legislative districts after a bipartisan commission in that state deadlocked. So again, the process, the normal process in those states resulting in deadlocks, a failure to identify how the lines should be drawn there. So we've got some experts coming in, some consultants coming in on the hire of the Wisconsin Supreme Court to assist in this process. What in particular did the Supreme Court say should happen next? Well, the Supreme Court said that it will also solicit from the parties, obviously the opposing parties in this litigation, their own set of maps, presumably consistent with their view about what should happen, consistent with this contiguity principle embraced by, reaffirmed by the Wisconsin Supreme Court just yesterday, directing that the parties to the lawsuit file by January 12th their renewed maps, their new maps that are consistent with the Supreme Court case. And in addition to that, reports from them, arguments from them, memorandums from them also due 10 days after that. So we've got a fairly quick schedule coming up. Obviously, lots of focus on this right over the holidays coming up right now. Then reports from those consultants are due by February 1 with responses a week later. Again, a very, very aggressive calendar. Why? Because the State Elections Commission has told all of us, including the Supreme Court, that we've got by March 15th in which to get this all in place. When we come back from this break, we'll talk more about how that's all going to happen, and we'll also hear from the dissenters in that case right here on our Saturday morning broadcast.
How to cover up a scene. Good thing Esty's sister's gonna swear she was with me.
She was with me, dude.
Good thing his mistress took out a big life insurance policy.
From Birchwood to Poplar, this is the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH, your home for news, talk, and sports.
ABC News, I'm Derek Dennis. Fog grounding several flights this Christmas Eve morning at Chicago O'Hare. But elsewhere, delays and cancellations have been minimal this holiday weekend. On the roads, AAA says some 115 million Americans are traveling 50 miles or more through New Year's Day, and some could be hitting wintry weather.
Those dreaming of a white Christmas might see a blizzard instead in parts of Nebraska and South Dakota, where winds could gust up to 55 miles per hour with heavy snow coming down, around 8 to 18 inches possible in parts of Nebraska and South Dakota between now and Thursday. And we're also looking at drifting, of course, with that wind and power outages possible, too.
ABC meteorologist Kenton Jawicki. In Florida, a manhunt for a gunman who opened fire inside a mall, killing a man and wounding a woman. Happened at the Paddock Mall in Ocala outside Orlando. Police calling the shooting targeted. Witnesses say the gunman was dressed in all black, including a face mask. This is ABC News.
Injured Badgers player. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. College basketball, the Wisconsin Badgers with a win over Chicago State 80-53 Friday night. But the Badgers starting point guard, Chucky Hepburn, leaving the game with a groin injury. Head coach Greg Gard.
Yeah, he'll just have some time off. He was walking around in the locker room afterwards. You know, it'll be sore, I'm sure, for a little bit.
The Badgers host Iowa January 2nd. NBA, it's the Bucks and the Knicks at Madison Square Garden, Monday, Christmas Day, tip off 11 a.m. Milwaukee won game one, 130 to 111 for New York. The Bucks' Damian Lillard, 19 points, 9 rebounds, and was asked inside a very happy Bucks locker room about the growth of this team.
I think it's, you know, us just growing as a group. You put a lot of really good players together. It takes time to gel and to get to know each other. And just to make things work for everybody. And early in the season, I just kept saying, you know, it's good that we're learning and we're winning. You know how to make it work for everybody a little bit. So
they're having a good time. That's the Bucks' Damian Lillard with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. Clouds and some dense fog around the area at times today. We'll see highs of the lower 50s, some very late day rain chances, south winds gusting up around 30. For your Christmas Eve, rain chances, lows in the lower 40s, and winds will stay breezy. Currently 44 degrees.
Could there be a better name? Auto Value Parts Stores. They aren't just about air fresheners or fuzzy dice. Auto Value Parts Stores are all about parts, auto parts, and advice. Pros who know auto parts with tons of tips when you need them the most. You want real value? Don't go to a place with a cute name. Go to Auto Value. Could there be a better name? I didn't think so. Your Auto Value Parts Store. We've got the parts. We've got the smarts.
Let April Johnson and Route 63 Realty find your seasonal sanctuary. As lifelong Northland experts, they unite buyers and sellers seamlessly. Their full-service agency offers showings, advertising, professional photography, and special programs like Homes for Heroes and free market analysis. April Johnson, your local problem-solving pro, ensures smooth transactions. Contact 715-558-1077 for a free market analysis. Visit them at the 6327 intersection for a festive journey to your new home. Happy holidays from Route 63 Realty.
It's fully leaded education talk.
Hard facts with a humorous twist.
Check out Busted Pencils, Tuesdays at 7 on the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH, and on the Civic Media app.
I was proud to be a soldier.
I told the truth and got kicked out.
And so I thought to myself, I'm taking this rule down.
If you're an LGBTQ plus veteran, your memories are important too. Share your story with the Library of Congress Veterans History Project, where firsthand accounts from U.S. military veterans are preserved and made accessible for researchers and future generations. Visit loc.gov/vets to submit your stories, photographs, and documents today.
It's never personal, only politics. The Devil's Advocates Radio Show with Dom and Crute.
Weekdays from 4 until 6
on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Your hometown station for news, talk, and sports. This is the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media. UK.
Draw the cat eyes sharp enough to kill a man.
And we are back here on our Saturday morning broadcast. Thank you for once again joining me as we talk about this major decision issued just yesterday by our Wisconsin Supreme Court ordering that new legislative maps be drawn with all deliberate speed here. The Wisconsin Election Commission has advised everyone, including the Supreme Court, we've got until March 15th to get the new district lines in place, to get all the judicial and maybe legislative and executive wrangling about this all done. If you don't do it by then, some of the election processes in the state of Wisconsin in jeopardy. Indeed, that is going to be, I believe, one of the major issues of 2024 across the board. Timing, timing, timing. Constantly looking at the clock, looking not only at the campaigns and the elections coming up, but also about things going on inside and outside the courts. Timing, a major issue in 2024, including this situation right here, prompted by the Supreme Court's finding that the present maps in place for the previous election are in violation of the contiguity requirement of our state Supreme Court. And so, with that March 15th deadline looming, the Wisconsin Supreme Court not only identifying these consultants who will help in redrawing the map, if indeed, as we can probably predict, the legislature and the executive branch fail to do what the Supreme Court is telling them that they can do again, which is to come up with new maps that are consistent with its opinion issued just yesterday. Lots of things going on. Likely that the new maps, if indeed the schedule set forth by the Wisconsin Supreme Court is followed, likely that those maps would be announced sometime in late February, early March, unless, once again, the legislature acts first in combination with the executive branch to put new maps in place. The bottom line, the upshot of all this is that's the procedure, that's the timing on this, all of it having to do with the legitimacy of elections here in the state of Wisconsin, and arguably have some implications upon national elections as well. Now, I already read to you the key finding from the majority issued by, coming off of the pen of Jill Karofsky, one of the associate justices. As we always do here on our Saturday morning broadcast, we also provide information about what the dissenters said about this decision. And predictably, it is strong. We've got the dissenting opinion by Justice Annette Ziegler. She says this. She says this deal was sealed on election night. She's making reference, of course, to the fairly recent election of Janet Protasiewicz to the Supreme Court. She goes on to say this in her dissenting opinion. Again, this is not the law of the case, but this is what she says in dissent. She says, four justices remapped Wisconsin, even though this constitutional responsibility is to occur every 10 years after a census. She's right about that. By the other two branches of the government, the public understands this. She understands the process well there. The issue, of course, which is the reason for the dissent, the reason for the majority opinion, the disagreement between the four and three on the Supreme Court, is what the Constitution says about that very process that should be undertaken every 10 years in the wake of the census. She went on to accuse the majority of judicial activism on steroids and said the court of four takes a wrecking ball to the law. That's Justice Annette Ziegler, the dissent coming off of her pen of just yesterday. Rebecca Bradley, also among the dissenting justices, referred to the liberal majority as handmaidens of the Democratic Party, saying they trample the rule of law, dishonor the institution of the judiciary, and undermine democracy. And then we have Brian Hagedorn, the third member of the dissenting justices here, and he says this. He says, it's a sad turn for the Wisconsin Supreme Court. He says, today the court dives headlong into politics, choosing to wield the power it has while it has it. He says, Wisconsinites searching for an institution unpolluted by partisan warfare will not find it here. Strong language in both directions from the majority and here from the dissenters as well. Again, a lot of focus here upon what happens next. Significantly inside the majority opinion, the majority also saying it is going to abandon this concept identified the last time around by the Supreme Court when the majority was in a different configuration, a different ideological mindset at the time, they adopted this least change practice, this least change policy, the idea that we're going to change the map somewhat, but not do some major changes in them. The Supreme Court yesterday finding that that particular standard is not good, telling explicitly all the parties to this litigation, telling all of us that under its contiguity decision issued just yesterday, it's going to abandon that least change approach and instead focus on what is right under the law, what is right under the Constitution, requiring contiguity among the line-drawing districts, the assembly districts, and the Senate districts as well. Significantly, 54 of our 99 assembly districts and 21 of our 33 Senate districts violate the state constitution's contiguity requirement, something not lost on the majority of the Supreme Court. Litigation obviously ongoing on these kinds of things. And by my count, at least a dozen states out there throughout the United States of America challenging the same kinds of things. Again, going back to the 2020 census, as the minority says. Now, what happens next? Well, that's what happens if indeed there is no further appeal, no further judicial challenge to this. That's the program, that's the policy, the practice laid out by the majority for what's going to happen next with consultants, more memorandums from the lawyers, more proposed maps coming forward, and then a decision by the Supreme Court about which maps will in fact be set for the 2024 elections, the voting here in our great state. Now, plainly, there are an awful lot of people out there who said, well, gee, is there any remedy to that? That is the Supreme Court decision of just yesterday. And the answer is yes. We know that the Constitution of the United States of America, our federal constitution, as we're going to talk about more in just another moment related to Colorado, the federal constitution also provides a mechanism for United States Supreme Court review of decisions by a highest state court. And plainly in the state of Wisconsin, that is our Wisconsin Supreme Court. So can a petition be made to the federal Supreme Court, to the nine justices in Washington, D.C., to appeal, to seek review of the decision issued just yesterday by our state Supreme Court? The answer is yes. There is a procedural mechanism for doing that. The question is whether or not the federal Supreme Court, the United States Supreme Court, those justices, whether four of them out of the nine decide that this is the kind of case they want to take. As we have talked about in great length, talking about civics here on our Saturday morning broadcast, and indeed on other broadcasts of civic media, the United States Supreme Court, unlike other appellate courts, picks and chooses which cases appear in front of it. Right now, as of this morning, December 23rd, the United States Supreme Court has identified 50 cases altogether that are under review right now. We've talked about many of those. We're going to talk about some of them again this morning. 50 cases from around the country, including some state court decisions, all of those on the docket, doing this thing called granting a writ of certiorari. The writ of certiorari, this granting cert process, which basically says, okay, we'll take a look at that lower court decision. That is not an automatic procedure. And the Supreme Court, again, has to make decisions about whether or not it will decide to review decisions of the lower federal courts and indeed decisions of state courts as well. And that's exactly what presumably will happen here. My strong sense is, all of you know this as well, right now that petition is being prepared to get to the Supreme Court, to ask the United States Supreme Court to review what our state Supreme Court did just yesterday. That's already been promised by an awful lot of people in the legislature, beyond the legislature, who are dissatisfied with what the state Supreme Court has done as of yesterday. The significant question is whether or not the federal Supreme Court will take that case. And we've got a mixed record on that. Plainly, the federal Supreme Court has, as I just indicated previously, with respect to Wisconsin, sometimes taken a case from our high court. It did that the last time around, finding that the Voting Rights Act analysis undertaken by the majority at that time was not adequate, sending it back down and having the state Supreme Court then adopt the legislative maps. And those were the ones who were put in place for 2022. Question, whether or not under these circumstances, where you have the highest court of the state of Wisconsin interpreting what? Not federal law, But the law of the state of Wisconsin, the Constitution of the state of Wisconsin, interpreting this contiguity requirement, has also been reviewed by federal courts, but focusing in particular upon what is perhaps a, perhaps not uniquely state issue, but certainly a state issue related to the language of our state constitution, not squarely a federal issue. That certainly could be the basis upon which the Supreme Court says, you know what, we're going to let the lower court, the state Supreme Court decision stand and not decide this case, or they could take it up. They could also grant cert. They could grant that writ of certiorari, in which case, highly likely that this ambitious but achievable agenda, this syllabus, this agenda put forth by the Wisconsin Supreme Court to get all this done by March 15th could be rent asunder. And the process, the timing once again, to get all these lines in place to do the redrawn maps by March 15th, that arguably, unless once again the federal Supreme Court takes the case, directs a very, very quick resolution of the case before it, and sends it back down to the Wisconsin Supreme Court for further action, unless all of that happens very quickly, including either the adoption of new maps, which would add even more time, or simply the continuing effectiveness of the maps that are now have been in place until yesterday. Lots and lots of things happening here. Lots of potential. We'll stay very much on top of this story as it once again affects dramatically the way in which we vote here in the state of Wisconsin for our state representatives in the state assembly and the state Senate as well. A huge decision coming out of the Wisconsin Supreme Court just yesterday afternoon. Then we go to Colorado, another state Supreme Court, not a federal court, a state Supreme Court. And you know what this issue is all about because you have seen the news from early this past week. The Colorado Supreme Court makes this major decision coming out of its review of the situation there, finding that Donald Trump is disqualified from appearing on the 2024 ballot in that state. Ruling on Tuesday, the High Court in Colorado, that former President Donald Trump disqualified from holding office again. Why? Why? Again, invoking the 14th Amendment, Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. What does it say? We know what it says. We've talked about this an awful lot. It disqualifies people who engage in insurrection against the Constitution after taking an oath to support it. Again, this amendment to the Constitution, adopted 1868 in the wake of the Civil War, to keep people who were previously in government, took an oath of office to support the Constitution from coming back into government. On its face, the language seems to suggest that there is at least a colorable, and I would offer a very compelling argument that if you engage in insurrection, even in 2022, 2021, 2020, any time long after the Civil War period of time, you all, after having taken a previous oath of office, you also would be disqualified. That's the argument that would keep Donald Trump off the ballot in Colorado, and as we'll comment, in other states as well. What did the Supreme Court in Colorado say in particular? Said that Donald Trump, and this is the blockbuster news coming out of this very thoughtful, long opinion coming out of the Colorado Supreme Court, that Donald Trump did indeed engage in insurrection. They find that interpreting the language of Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, that insurrectionist language is applicable here, and that Donald Trump engaged in insurrection of the sort that the authors of the 14th Amendment intended to prohibit, and taking actions leading up to the January 6th storming of the Capitol. And that finding by this major Supreme Court decision coming out of Colorado just this past week, affecting dramatically who's going to be on the ballot in Colorado, maybe. And we'll get to the maybe portion of it in just a moment. The court in Colorado finding that the Colorado Secretary of State is now directed to exclude Donald Trump's name from the state's Republican primary ballot, does not address significantly the general election. All right, so that's the order from the Colorado Supreme Court. The Colorado Supreme Court understands how serious this is and plainly focuses on that, saying we do not reach these conclusions lightly. When we come back, I'll tell you more about what the Colorado Supreme Court said earlier this past week, why it's important here in Wisconsin, why it's important to all of us in the United States of America.
Driving in your Benz. Lately she's been dressing for revenge.
This is the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
Did you know December 25th isn't just Christmas? It's also National Pumpkin Pie Day. This delicious dessert originated in the U.S. in the 1800s and really grew in popularity when it became a part of Thanksgiving, though the official day to celebrate pumpkin pie is still December 25th. Sounds like a delicious reason to enjoy it. Don't forget to add some ice cream or whipped cream for an extra special treat. I'm Terry Barr, and from all of us with the Civic Media Radio Network. Happy holidays.
Tune into The Empowered Caregiver with me, Liza Hellenbrand, every Wednesday evening at 7.
On the Buzz of the North, 910 AM, WBZH.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow.
Wisconsin's home for daily conversations about the state's latest headlines and stories.
Weekday mornings from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. You're listening to the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Don't blame me, love made me crazy. If it doesn't, you ain't doing it right. Lord, save me, my
drug. We are back. Thank you for once again joining me this morning as we talk about the Colorado Supreme Court. This explosive ruling coming out of Colorado, finding that Donald Trump will not appear on the ballot, at least for the Republican primary, based upon the decision by the Colorado Supreme Court that indeed the language of Section 3 of the 14th Amendment describing insurrection precludes him from appearing on that ballot. The Colorado lengthy ruling on Tuesday, they reversed basically a Denver district judge's finding last month that Section 3 did not apply to the presidency, a ruling by the judge there that had a lot of people scratching their heads. Instead, the Colorado Supreme Court affirmed the district judge's orders on two other conclusions. First of all, that Trump's actions before and on January 6th constituted engaging in insurrection. The lower court had said that, and the Supreme Court also says that. And also finding, the lower court and the Supreme Court, that the courts had the authority to enforce Section 3 against a person whom Congress had not specifically designated. So lots of agreement between the Colorado Supreme Court and the lower court. But the difference is just this. The court went on to say, the high court went on to say, a majority of the court holds that President Trump is disqualified from holding the office of president under Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. Because he is disqualified, it would be a wrongful act under the election code for the Colorado Secretary of State to list him as a candidate on the presidential primary ballot. In particular, the Supreme Court parted company with the lower court in the lower court's finding that the presidency, the executive himself, herself, itself, is not covered by Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. There they said, no, it's got to be covered by the language of the 14th Amendment. More broadly, finding that Donald Trump had engaged in insurrection, keeping him off that ballot. A huge result. The cases, of course, there coming out of the Colorado Supreme Court, focusing on questions that a lot of other jurisdictions are also wrestling with. Was it an insurrection when Trump supporters stormed the Capitol to try to stop the certification of the voting on that day? If so, did Donald Trump engage in that insurrection? The Colorado Supreme Court says yes, through his messages to the supporters beforehand, his speech that morning on the Ellipse, which we've talked about at great length, and his Twitter posts actually during the attack itself. Do courts have the authority to enforce Section 3? The Colorado Supreme Court says yes. And does Section 3 apply to the presidency? And that's where the difference comes in between the lower court and the high court. The high court saying yes, indeed. All of that coming out of the Colorado Supreme Court just this past week. As always, we talk about the dissenters as well. We have some dissenters coming out of that opinion of the Colorado Supreme Court. the Colorado Supreme Court, the three justices who dissented, did so basically on procedural grounds, which is interesting, not on the merits, not on the merits of whether Donald Trump engaged in insurrection, about whether Section 3 actually applies to the presidency, which is the focus of the Supreme Court case, in three separate dissenting opinions, again, adding lots and lots of pages to this overall decision coming out of the High Court in Colorado, each based its decision, its dissent, on different legal arguments. And they all concluded that the court, the High Court there in Colorado, had overstepped its authority. One of the justices said, for example, that even if we are convinced that a candidate committed horrible acts in the past, dare I say, engaged in insurrection, there must be procedural due process before we can declare that individual disqualified from holding public office. That's what Justice Carlos Samore Jr. wrote in dissent. He added, I am disturbed about the potential chaos wrought by an imprudent, unconstitutional, and standardless system in which each state gets to adjudicate Section 3 disqualification cases on an ad hoc basis. And indeed, that gets us to my final commentary about that this morning, which is this will almost certainly be before the federal Supreme Court. We don't know yet. Likely that Wisconsin at least will try to get review by the federal Supreme Court. Highly likely that the Colorado case will be successfully appealed. And by that, I mean just procedurally before the federal Supreme Court. The federal Supreme Court, the United States Supreme Court, going to be determining almost certainly whether or not the findings by the Colorado Supreme Court will hold with respect to both the finding of insurrection and the applicability to the presidency of the language of Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. That almost certainly going before the Supreme Court. And because of the issues, candidly, raised by the dissent and certainly identified by the majority there as well, that the opinion raises the prospect that you may get differing decisions from all sorts of other jurisdictions out there. The Wisconsin Supreme Court decision, perhaps going up to the Supreme Court. The Colorado decision, almost certainly landing in the Supreme Court. Why? Because of the need to ensure that there is some national uniformity when it comes to this kind of decision-making. We know that there are other jurisdictions out there right now wrestling with these issues, both in legislative actions and also judicial actions. We don't want a piecemeal approach when it comes to this kind of thing. If we do, that is the kind of thing, obviously, that the Supreme Court would want to be addressing when it comes to the legitimacy of the finding under the section of the Constitution that the Colorado Supreme Court invoked just this past week. Interestingly, in connection with other things going on there, out there, with respect to this kind of insurrectionist argument and whether or not Donald Trump can stay on the ballots of other states, here's something that's kind of gone under the radar. Maine, the Maine Secretary of State, the state of Maine is poised to issue a decision this coming week that could also bolster this movement to keep former President Trump off the primary ballots across the country. In this particular case in Maine, Shenna Bellows, who's the Secretary of State there, is right now weighing three separate complaints challenging similar kinds of things under the Section 3 of Article Amendment 14 of the Constitution about its eligibility to appear on the state's Republican primary ballot. Two of the three complaints in front of the Secretary of State right now in that particular state are based upon that same argument that was pending before the Colorado Supreme Court. The challenge there in Maine is based upon the peculiar situation, but a part of the routine process there in the state of Maine that has the Secretary of State weighing in first and then voters filing petitions, not lawsuits to follow up on that. Her decision can then be appealed to the state superior court, a different process there in Maine, but raising the same kind of issue. When we come back after our top of the hour break, we're going to talk more about that, take some calls and comments about all these issues right here on our Saturday morning broadcast. Stay with us for this very important discussion about voting and the future of our nation and the state of Wisconsin right here on Civic Media.
Hey,
Keywords choice for news, talk, and sports. The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH. Did you know this local radio station is part of Civic Media? Learn more about the entire network at civicmedia.us.
We here at WBZH The Buzz have partnered with the Hayward Chamber of Commerce to remind you to shop local this holiday season. Small local businesses are the lifeblood of the community, and preserving them is key to preserving those things we most enjoy about the Northwoods. Small businesses are the first in local employment and charitable giving, and shopping local is the best way to stimulate a small-town economy. The Hayward Chamber of Commerce and WBZH The Buzz are especially thankful to those who choose local small businesses first this holiday season.
This is the Buzz of the North, WBZH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.